I am a mountain. I am a tall tree. Oh, I am a swift wind sweeping the country.
Well, Henry Cooper's nothing but a tramp. He's a bum. I'm the world's greatest. He must fall in 5 rounds, but if you talk about me, I'll cut his 3. I'm the prettiest sight in the ring today. That's my label.
Round 5. No special training. Just here at the fight. I'm ready to back up everything I'm saying, and I'm through talking.
The man to beat me haven't been born yet.
I'm that star up in the sky. I'm that mountain peak up high. Hey, I made it. I'm the world's greatest.
Well, I'll tell Henry Cooper, he's watching this show, to come to the fight and be ready to fight, because I'm coming to get you. I'm coming to London to get you. And after I'm through beating him, I think he'll have to join the Beatles and be a singer.
Joe Frazier's in trouble, because the Muhammad Ali Joe Frazier's going to meet is going to be better than the Muhammad Ali he met 3 years ago.
I am an eagle, oh, I am a lion down in the jungle.
I don't think that there's no heavyweight alive who couldn't beat me. I know there are none alive.
And I said, Joe's gonna come out smoking, and I ain't gonna be joking. I'll be pecking and a poking, pouring water on his smoking. And this might shock and amaze you, but I will destroy Joe Frazier. Some people say, you better watch Joe Frazier. He's awful strong. I said, tell him to try Van Rollon.
And I'm that little bit of hope. When my back's up against the ropes, I can feel it. I'm the world's greatest.
In the ring of life, I'll rain love.
I will rain.
I done made you famous enough. Everywhere I go, you follow me to get your name in the papers and on television.
I'd amaze you. Still be stealing bikes in Louisville if
don't
it
tell tell people I stole bikes.
You're being extremely truculent. Whatever truculent means, if that's good, I'm there.
I hope it's not an act. I hope you mean it.
If it's an act, just look at my record and see if there have other fights been acts. Have they been acts?
Not so far.
Well, what makes you think I'm acting?
And with that final stage of the act.
This is unexpected. I didn't know you would invite me to do this. You must be on boxing position and just have a little dance like we're boxing, and in just 1 second, I have to time it for 1 second. Right there.
And where and when?
I'd like to fight whoever you think's the best, the number one man. I'd say he's Zor Foley.
I'm not sure that there's anybody left, really, for you to fight.
You.
That may come about someday. Thank you for coming.
Just stay in shape. Tell you, Coach Sal, I've been taking oxygen because I needed the oxygen. What you will see is I won't need the oxygen tonight. I'm ready.
You always said, Muhammad, you're not the man you were 10 years ago, right?
Right.
Well, I'm going to ask your wife, are you the man you was last year?
You'll get a quick answer.
Last night, I had a dream. When I got to Africa, I had one hell of a rumble. I had to beat Tarzan's behind first for claiming to be the king in the jungle. For this fight, I've wrestled with alligators. I've tussled with a whale. I done handcuffed lightning and put thunder in jail. You know I'm bad. I have murdered a rock. I injured a stone and I hospitalized a brick. I'm so bad I make medicine sick. I'm so fast, man, I can run through a hurricane and don't get wet. When George Foreman meets me, he'll pay his debt. I can drown a drink of water and kill a dead tree. Wait till you see Muhammad Ali.
Yes, and that is how we start this afternoon's current sports. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Al Martin. On this Monday, June 6th, 2016, Throughout this entire hour here on WKAR AM 870, we will be paying tribute and homage to the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. News broke on Friday evening that the great Ali sadly passed away at the age of 74. I happened to be at the Lugnuts game that night with my fraternity brother. And after the game, we decided to go and get a bite to eat at the Nut House, which is located right across the street. While there, we are eating dinner, and midway through the conversation, I just happened to glance up at the television screen. And of course, I saw 2 years with a dash in between both of them. 1942-2016. And the most famous name in all of sports, Muhammad Ali, flanked right above those 2 years. I immediately stopped what I was doing and asked my frat brother, is that real? What's going on here? Did Muhammad Ali just pass away? He immediately stopped what he was doing, glanced up at the television, and as soon as we just really flipped our wig at the news, you started to feel this buzz throughout the entire restaurant. No one could believe it. You know, my emotions went from shock to then sadness. And then as the weekend went on, especially on Saturday and Sunday, you felt this mood of reflection, reflecting on the life and legacy that was and is, because even in death, we still feel the impact that Muhammad Ali had on today's sporting world and well beyond that. Cultural and universal, in fact. Watching candid footage throughout the weekend of Ali and some of his most famous fights like Rumble in the Jungle and the Thriller in Manila. Listening to his jabber mouth, really one of the first athletes to toot his own horn, as I stated this morning on Current State. Just setting a tone that an athlete can be more than just that. An athlete can use his or her platform to influence millions in countless different ways. Rest in peace, Muhammad Ali. We tribute you throughout this hour here on WKAR's Current Sports. We encourage all of our listeners out there, if you have a memory, a story that you want to share live here on our airwaves, you know that number, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Throughout this hour on the show, we have a treat for you all. We will be inviting Ali Easley to the show in just moments, folks. He is the head trainer at Crown Boxing Club here in Lansing, Michigan. He is also a member of the kinesiology department at Michigan State University and is the founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation, otherwise known as HAWK. Ali will join me live in studio to talk about the impact that Muhammad Ali had on his life, the sport of boxing, and beyond. Also, later on in this hour, we will chat with Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame boxer. He will call in to share his thoughts on what Muhammad Ali meant to him and also tell a few stories of meeting Muhammad in person and how that relationship blossomed over time. And also on the back end of the show, we will invite our very own WKAR's Current State producer and reporter, Scott Pohl, to this hour to share his own story of meeting the great Muhammad Ali. So it's going to be a fun-filled hour shared with many memories. Many of you out there, if you really have an affinity for what Ali meant to the sporting world, culturally, socially, I'm sure this will tug at the emotions a bit. So again, call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. It's going to be a fun hour, folks, one filled with reflection and raw emotion. All right, well, let's get to it before we bring Ali Easley to the show. Let's hit you with our current sports quick hit headliners for this Monday, June 6th. All right, folks, we start with the Dean Shippey Capital Diamond Classic. That will resume today with semifinal action at Cooley Law School Stadium. At 5:30 p.m., DeWitt will take on powerhouse Grand Ledge, while in the second game, starting at 7:30 p.m., that will pit Mason versus Holt. The winners will face off for the championship on Wednesday at 6 p.m. at Cooley Law School Stadium. James DeCosmo. He delivered his second career goal for Lansing United just 26 seconds into the second half to earn a point in a 1-1 draw against Grand Rapids FC yesterday. Grand Rapids had taken the lead in the 13th minute when Scott Doney picked up a bobbling ball that Joannis Sturbero couldn't handle. But the visitors did not put a shot on goal after the 30th minute in the match, and Lansing carried the play for the last 60 minutes. United will continue their homestand when they take on AFC Ann Arbor on June 10th at the East Lansing Soccer Complex. This weekend, the Michigan State men's basketball program hosted four-star forward Tarian Thompson for a visit that ends today, and a decision from Thompson is expected to come shortly thereafter. To this point, Syracuse has been viewed as the heavy favorite for Thompson, a 6'9", 200-pound forward from Brewster Academy in New Hampshire. Michigan State currently has two scholarships available for next year. It has already signed a four-player recruiting class for the 2016 class that is ranked number 4 in the 247 sports team rankings. The second-seeded Michigan softball team needed a win against 8th-seeded Florida State to stay alive in the Women's College World Series just 12 hours after falling to third-seeded Oklahoma on Saturday night. But the Wolverines could not get the job done, losing 1-0 to the Seminoles to bow out of the postseason yesterday. The Wolverines finished the year 52-7, impressive stuff, in a season marked by team and individual accomplishments, such as another regular season Big Ten championship, head coach Carol Hutchins becoming the all-time leader in career wins, and Sierra Romero being named the National Player of the Year. Coming short of the glory, but still a stout year for the Wolverines nonetheless. Kay Felder, the Oakland University point guard and NBA draft candidate, is working out for the LA Lakers today. He will go through drills with the Detroit Pistons on June 15th. He also has worked out for the New Orleans Pelicans, and Isaac would be thrilled if they get him, right? The San Antonio Spurs, Indiana Pacers, Atlanta Hawks, New York Knicks, and BK Nets. The NBA draft takes place on June 23rd. Justin Upton's two-run double completed a four-run fifth inning, providing the support for Justin Verlander to complete the Tigers' three-game series sweep of the Chicago White Sox with a 5-2 win Sunday at Comerica Park. Verlander is now 5-5 on the year. He improved to 4-0, though, in his last five meetings with the White Sox, delivering seven innings of two-run ball on five hits with a walk and eight Ks. Francisco Rodriguez converted his 17th consecutive save opportunity since his last blown save on opening day in Miami. It's the longest streak by a Tigers closer since Joaquin Benoit converted his first 22 save chances back in 2013, K-Rod leads the American League in saves. The Toronto Blue Jays make the trip to the D to open a three-game series at Comerica Park at 7:10 p.m. tonight. Michael Fulmer will try to continue his dominant stretch of baseball opposite of J.A. Happ. If the San Jose Sharks are going to go out, they won't make it easy for the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Sharks got a 3-2 OT win Saturday against the Penguins, making the series 2-1. Two free agent signings from a year ago provided the heroics in Saturday night. Joel Ward with the slap shot heard across the bay to tie the game 8:32 into the third period, and Jonas Descalvi with the roof job 12:18 into overtime, a goal that is of this moment goes down as the biggest in Sharks history. Game 4 takes place tonight at 8 p.m. In the NBA Finals last night, the Golden State Warriors took a 2-0 series lead over LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers with a 110-77 romping at Oracle Arena. Game 3 is scheduled for Wednesday at 9 p.m. in Cleveland. And last but not least, Denver Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib was shot in his lower right leg and was being treated at a Dallas hospital on Sunday. Now, sources told ESPN's Adam Schefter on Monday that a bullet entered and exited Talib's leg. It hit no arteries and tore no ligaments. Talib got stitches afterward, and a team source told ESPN's Ed Werder that Talib did not require surgery. According to the Broncos, Talib is expected to be released from Medical City Hospital today, but he won't be able to join the team for his scheduled trip to Washington, D.C., where the team will be honored at the White House for its Super Bowl 50 win. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Again, folks, we are taking your calls and reading your comments on today's show in honor of the greatest of all time. That's right, Muhammad Ali, who sadly passed away Friday evening at the age of 74. Call in to be a part of today's show, 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Without further ado, I do believe it's about that time to start today's show.
I'd like to know what you're going to do when you retire from boxing.
I think he's probably taking the last count at the moment. I'll do my best to wake him up.
Just sleep. That's all I'm going to do. What am I going to do in the next 16 years? What's the best thing I can do? Get ready to meet God. Owning real estate, going in business, teaching boxers, that won't get me to heaven. How many here believe there's a supreme being, believe there's a God? How many believe there's some power that made the sun, the moon, the stars? How many believe that this stuff didn't just come out here? Somebody wiser than us made it. How many believe there's a God? And to go to hell and God is going to judge my soul, the police, I might kill people, I might rob people. The authorities might not catch me. The FBI, Scotland Yard might not catch me. But when I die, somebody's watching me and keeping count, and I can't get away, and I'm going to burn forever and ever and ever. I'll go to heaven. So what am I going to do when I'm through fighting? I only have 16 years to be productive, get myself ready to meet God and go to the best place. Don't that make sense?
Thank you.
Muhammad Ali, folks, I tell you, what an eerie snippet there as a young fan asked Muhammad Ali during the back end of his career what was his plans after retirement. And Ali, always a man who stood up for what he believed in and really didn't care about what other people thought, whether you criticized him or loved him for it. Muhammad Ali, he is a cultural icon who the sports world will certainly miss. And on today's show, we mourn the death of Muhammad Ali throughout this entire hour. I am now thrilled to have in studio a dear friend of the show. His name is Ali Easley. Right, ironic, right? Ali Easley, head trainer at Crown Boxing Club in Lansing. He is also a member of the kinesiology department at Michigan State University and founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation, otherwise known as HAWK, that does some extraordinary things in the community here. And hey, folks, as you heard in the background, we also have another special guest that is joining Ali, sitting in his lap right now. It is his so cute daughter, Nellie, who is also here. She just finished scarfing down some baby food, so she's pretty amped up right now. Ali, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. How you doing?
I'm great. I appreciate you having us on.
Always. I know, right? Us, right? Yeah. Well, I first want to start this conversation, Ali, with just a general reaction to the news. You heard my story of how, I'm sitting there eating dinner and I look up, having to look up at ESPN SportsCenter that was on that night, and I see the breaking news concerning the death of Muhammad Ali. For you, Ali, how did you find out the news and what was your reaction upon hearing about his death?
I found out early in the morning. My wife had said something to me. She had saw something, I believe, online, and I was just kind of taken by shock. You know, he's you don't really hear a whole lot of him these days, but he's somebody that you never really foresaw something like this coming. You know, you knew he'd had some health concerns, but, you know, you didn't really hear much of him being sick or anything. So I would say I was, you know, really surprised when I heard the news and quite saddened by it.
Certainly. Now, you know, it's so cool because, Ali, we've done a feature out at your gym at Crown Boxing. I remember the first year when I was here at WKAR, my producer Tim and I, we went out to your gym, and I got to see firsthand the extraordinary things that you're doing there, bringing kids, you know, off the street, putting them in the gym, and just really giving them a tool that can be used to take out aggression, and also just a tool just to keep kids productive and out of all of the crazy madness that goes outside of the gym. You're doing a great job with Hawk. It's really one of those foundations that you look at and just really tip your cap at. I got to ask you, though, when you discuss, when you put in context the kids that you work with on a day-to-day basis, Ali, and the impact that Muhammad Ali had on the world of boxing itself, do you see Ali's impact at all on the generation today?
Well, you know, I think the one thing that you can see with Muhammad Ali and the kids that we work today is just they come from the exact same story. I think Muhammad Ali's famous story about getting involved in a gym resulted from him stealing a bike.
Exactly.
And then having an encounter with the police officer and then encouragement to get to a gym. And I would think that a lot of the young kids, although they might not relate to that right now, I believe that a lot of them come from that same type of environment. And, you know, in a few years from now, when they get a little older, they might realize the similarities that they faced in life that he did. Mm-hmm. And the accolades that he was able to achieve, and that might inspire them to continue on.
Certainly, I'm curious because, you know, when Ali was in his heyday, you know, I'm 25 years old, and I didn't have the luxury of watching the greatest boxer of all time, arguably the greatest athlete of all time, in his heyday, doing, you know, fighting against, you know, George Foreman in the Rumble in the Jungle, in the Thriller in Manila. I didn't get to see that firsthand. Do kids even know who Ali is today, when you talk to them about his impact on the world of boxing?
I think they do. I think it'd be, you know, you'd kind of be just remorse to say that kids don't know the name,
right?
Muhammad Ali. I mean, everybody knows the name. Everybody knows the affiliation with boxing. And, you know, he's had such an illustrious career that, you know, it's hard to not know the name and know something mm-hmm. about what he's done. And, you know, when you look at his career, a lot of people, you know, focus on, like, the accolades that he achieved and the professional ranks. And, you know, really in what I would, I guess, say my strong suit, you know, being in the amateurs, is he had just an amazing amateur, was a prolific amateur boxer.
Right.
And, you know, winning I believe he won the Kentucky Golden Gloves, you know, 5 or 6 times, and then the national tournament, you know, and then Olympic gold. I mean, so those are aspirations that I think some of the kids can relate to with his life more so than maybe like seeing him fight in his heyday.
And I think Nelly echoes those sentiments right now, Ali. Folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we have two guests joining us right now. We have Ali Easley, head trainer at Crown Boxing Club in Lansing, also a member of the kinesiology department here at Michigan State and founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation. Now, you hear, you know, Ali was self-proclaimed as the greatest of all time. And I think many people, you know, they believe that. When you look at Ali, and he never backed down from any opponent, Ali. And, you know, he had just an illustrious career. He went 56-5 was his overall record. You know, he beat guys like, as I mentioned, George Foreman, you know, Sonny Liston. You know, you can go on and on and on with the accolades. Ali, do you believe that Muhammad Ali is the greatest boxer of all time? And if so, why?
Well, I'd have to, you know, really think that he really was. And I think more than anything, when you look at Muhammad Ali's career from start to finish, you know, he was really an athlete that gave a fan everything he could ever ask for. Mm-hmm. You know, you see so many sports stories with guys like, you know, Mario Lemieux, for example. You know, he holds so many NHL records, but yet played half the time that maybe Gretzky played. And you wonder, what if? You look at a guy like Bo Jackson, who was amazing, and he gets hurt. You say, well, what if? But with Muhammad Ali, I mean, you got to see him from A to Z. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to watch him come up through the amateurs. Believe he won different weight classes in the amateur division, and then to the gold medal, and then obviously his professional career, and then moving on toward his philanthropy. I mean, as a fan, I just think you got everything you could ever ask for from him, and that's something that's really rare in this day and age. You know, a lot of people have favorite players, but, you know, you look at people that admired a guy like Barry Sanders, and then he suddenly retires, and you wonder, like, what if, or we want more. I don't think you ever had to say we want more with Muhammad Ali. He fought all the big-time competitions and on many occasions fought him more than once, took his losses mm-hmm. with his wins.
Right.
And I just don't think you could ask for more, and I think that in itself makes him one of, if not the greatest ever.
Totally agree. And again, Nelly, as soon as you're done with the wrench, he's right on cue agreeing with you. All right, well, before we get you out of here, Ali, I got to ask, because, again, I want to talk about this in this conversation in relation to what you do at Crown Boxing. When you look at how you run your gym and the type of kids you see come through your program, as you mentioned, you know, Ali, when he was growing up, he grew up in tough times. I mean, he came from a blue-collar family, to say the least. You know, his mother was a household domestic while his father painted billboards. He grew up in racial segregation. And, you know, again, he began boxing because, you know, he was stealing bikes. And then, you know, he goes to his police officer and says, you know, he's gonna whoop the thief that took his bike. And the officer says, you know what, let's put you in the gym and let's harness that aggression. How has Ali impacted what you do as a trainer and a teacher in a boxing ring?
Well, I think him having those stories so publicly known really helps guys like myself that run programs like this to be able to draw on his background and his success and how really when it all started, he was just one of these kids. He's no different than the kids that are in the gym today. Mm-hmm. And I think if you can kind of relate that story to him and what he succeeded in life and the situation some of these kids are currently in, I think it's a great learning tool. It's a great avenue to be able to persuade the other kids to stay in the sport or stay in structured environments and what can come of it. And I think it's just overall his experience in life, his life experiences are equal to that of the kids we have. Now, whether the kids we work with will, you know, navigate the realms of boxing as he did is yet to be discovered.
Certainly. Well, I tell you what, Ali, you exemplify what Ali, his Muhammad Ali, his impact, what he wanted to leave when it comes to his legacy in the ring and beyond it. And we hope you continue to do that. My man, Ali Easley, head trainer at Crown Boxing Club in Lansing, member of the kinesiology department at Michigan State, and founder of the Help a Willing Kid Foundation. Ali Easley, Ali, thanks so much for your time. And thank you, Nelly, for coming in too, all right?
I appreciate you. Thank you.
All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will continue to talk about the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali. And we will also invite Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame and Hall of Fame boxer. He will join us to talk about his personal relationship with Muhammad Ali during Ali's time as he resided here in the state of Michigan. That and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKER's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. How eerie has this year been, right? 2016, my goodness, folks. You know, we lost Prince 2 months ago. We've now lost Muhammad Ali. We lost David Bowie not too long ago as well. Just tough. Tough stuff, folks. We are losing legends every other month, it feels like. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, and I'm just told, I just got a buzz in my ear from Isaac right now that we got him. We got one of our guys that we wanted to get on to today's show to talk about the life and legacy that was Muhammad Ali. His name is Rob South, and Rob actually has very close ties right here to WKAR as he was a reporter for quite a while. And, you know, Isaac, this morning I was on Current State, as you know, because you engineered that show this morning. And I was on the show this morning with Mark Bayshore and Scott Pohl. And as we were talking about Muhammad Ali and his life, you know, Scott's going to share this story again on Current Sports later on in the hour about his own personal experience in meeting Muhammad Ali. But, you know, after we got off the air, you know, Scott said, Al, you have to get Rob South on the show. He's had just, he actually got a chance to sit down and interview Muhammad Ali in a very cool story. So I called Rob, and he wasn't in his office because he works for Eden Rapids Schools. He wasn't in his office there, and I left a voicemail. But when I came down, you said that Rob had called, and we weren't sure if we were going to get him on. But we do have him on the line right now, I believe. So, Rob South, welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. How you doing, Rob?
It's good. I'm doing great. How are you?
Oh, it is fantastic to hear your voice and to have you a part of of this hour talking about the life and legacy of Muhammad Ali. So Rob, I'll just start very open-endedly here. Talk about your time and the moment that you met the greatest.
Well, you know, it was one of those, it was really kind of a quirk. I was working in Kalamazoo, and my boss came into the office one day and said, "Hey, who wants to make some extra money?" He didn't say what it was about, and I just raised my hand. I mean, I was like, "Yeah, extra money, I'll go, whatever it is." And said, "Okay, the BBC needs you to go down and do a tape sync with Muhammad Ali." I'm like, "Whoa, what?" You know, a tape sync, all a tape sync is you just hold the microphone while somebody else asks questions over the phone. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I was expecting to go down there and have the whole thing last 5 minutes and pack up and leave. And, you know, I'd be lucky if he said hi to me. But, you know, as it turned out, the BBC was running late. And so the office manager there invited me into his office to wait until the BBC could call them back. And, you know, that 10 minutes I expected turned into an hour and a half. And the BBC, you know, called, they did their interview, and then I'm thinking I need to be in a hurry to get back to the station because I've got other work to do. And they say, "Hey, can you stay for lunch?" I'm like, "Yeah, duh, I can stay for lunch."
It's Muhammad Ali we're talking about, right?
yeah. I mean, like, and I jokingly, I told my coworkers, you know, if he asked me to stay for dinner, I'm gonna.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, here I was with Muhammad Ali, you know, and while we're waiting for the BBC, he's doing what you see Muhammad Ali do everywhere. You know, he's making connections with me, and he's telling jokes. He's got a cheap magic kit on his desk. I mean, the same one you get when you're a teenager. Uh-huh. And he's playing all these magic jokes on me. I mean, these tricks, and it's just fun to watch him do this and make, you know, just try to make that connection with me. You know, I mean, you know how it is, Al. When a journalist goes to interview a celebrity, 99.9% of the time, that celebrity is not interested in you at all.
Certainly.
They want the business done, and then you're gone. And Ali really did take an interest in who I was and why I was there and made me feel comfortable being there. And, you know, he talked a lot about Islam. This was in 2002, by the way, so just after 9/11. And he was very concerned with how Americans were perceiving Islam at the time and Muslims in general. And, you know, as you know, that relationship has sort of degraded over the years. It's even worse than it was in 2011. But he was very adamant, as a Muslim himself, that Islam is not a religion of violence and that the Muslim people are not violent. And he had written at the time a pretty long document that he shared with me that was basically, you know, about loving one another and looking past our differences and, you know, trying to forgive the sins of other people or individuals and not associate that with an entire group of people. And that's really who he was as a person. I mean, if you look at his life and his career, he used his celebrity to reach out to people, darker-skinned people. I mean, he wasn't militant about it, but he certainly was adamant that, you know, all people on the planet deserve respect and dignity, regardless of their color, regardless of their religion, regardless of their economic, social status, that we really have to give people that level of dignity and respect. And just spending time with him, I realized that he's absolutely genuine. You know, celebrities today, we look at him and they say, oh, you know, Save the Whales or, you know, whatever their
right.
whatever their thing is. And you're kind of like, yeah, but are you really genuine about it? You know, are you really serious or is this just your cause? And with Ali, you know, he was really serious about it. He was very genuine. And that's what I took away from the visit was this genuine, warm man. Now, he was already well into his Parkinson's disease, and so he was a little uneasy on his feet. And
yeah, that was my next question. Yeah, because I know that, you know, he battled this disease for 32 years, Rob. And I'm curious, when you went and did this interview sync with him, you know, what state of health he was in? I mean, was he very eloquent with his speaking, or was he really struggling to get words out?
No, he was really struggling. The interview itself was interesting because the only way that I could get the microphone close enough to his mouth with the phone configuration in his desk was to literally sit on his lap. I sort of straddled one leg and sat there on his knee while I held the microphone while he talked on the phone. So it was very intimate, in, you know, that I was very close to him the whole time physically during the interview.
And in fact,
you know, after the interview was done, they invited me for lunch, and I thought, oh, this is going to be some grand affair or something with all of the staff. And they took me into a private kitchen in his office and sat me down with him, and it was just the two of us for lunch. And, you know, he talked about his life in boxing and who his friends were. And I think Howard Cosell had passed away recently, so he brought up that relationship. And, and you know, anyone who grew up then would know that it was sort of, it seemed to be this very tense relationship. But, you know, he led me to believe that, you know, it was really just an act, that the show wasn't just about boxing, but the show was about this dramatic conflict between people that, you know, it was largely an act for them, and that they actually respected each other professionally. And so, you know, here I am interviewing one of my heroes. And, you know, I'm not a big sports guy, but, you know, when you grew up in the 70s, Muhammad Ali was everywhere and he was everything. And so, you know, he's obviously one of my heroes. But here I am eating lunch with Muhammad Ali, and his assistant comes in and says, well, how is everything? And I'm right in the middle. I've got this big mouthful of couscous, you know, and I'm just, I just look at it. I look at her and I point to Ali and I point back at me and I give her this look of, what, are you kidding me? Why are you asking me this question?
Right. And it, you know, that's so great. So it was just you two in a room having dinner. I mean, Rob, that has to be one of those moments that you look back at now, especially putting in perspective that, you know, Ali passed away on Friday. And you see all these tributes nationally, you know, CNN, you know, it had a whole weekend special long of tributes to Ali, and ESPN dedicated the majority of its sports coverage to the legacy of Muhammad Ali. I mean, that has to be a moment that you sit back and look at and say, was that a dream? Did that really happen?
Oh, it was amazing. It was amazing. Oh. I mean, it was one of those things where this, I can't imagine this ever happening. You know, I didn't, even when I had this opportunity to go down into the tape sink, I never really imagined I'd have lunch with him, you know, and, and it was, you know, his connection to me made me feel comfortable being there and being around him. And, you know, after lunch, he said, let me give you a tour of the gym. And because he's so unstable, this is mid-February, the weather was really crappy, so the parking lot is icy. Mm-hmm. And so he's holding on to me while we walk across the parking lot. And I'm thinking, I'm here holding up the champ.
Right. Oh, my
this
goodness.
This is surreal. How am I doing this? So it was just this really amazing time. The whole thing lasted about 3 hours. Where really it was just me and him. I mean, his assistant would come in once in a while and see how I was doing, but, you know, he didn't have any handlers. There weren't people who were saying, don't ask him any questions, you know, don't talk to him about this or that. And, it really did emphasize what a true human being this guy was. I mean, and just how larger than life and genuinely warm he was. I mean, he was just a really warm, compassionate person. And I just came away with that experience like, wow, this is amazing.
Unbelievable story. I tell you what, Rob, I'll be the first to say, along with many, that I'm a pretty jealous brother right now. That's a very cool story. And I got to ask you this, Rob, you know, because he, you know, after his retirement, you know, he had an 85-acre estate, you know, that you visited out in Berrien Springs. I'm wondering, you know, because he stayed there until the mid-2000s. Why did he decide to reside in Michigan?
You know, I don't really know exactly. Mm-hmm. My understanding was that it was a nice place and it was close to Chicago. So it was relatively close to, you know, airports, or, you know, he could get in and out fairly quickly. And but, you know, obviously he really loved the place, and he paid attention to the community, mm-hmm. and was very, very involved, or as much as he could be, with the community of Berrien Springs. He donated to the schools, you know, and to people, to the needy, and he helped as much as he could. And so I think wherever he would have lived, he would have done that. But I think we're very fortunate in Michigan to have somebody of his stature take on that role. And it's just sort of an amazing thing. I mean, celebrities today, you know, you think about the Kardashians, and what are they? I mean, they're not really.
Yeah, who are you telling, right? I could go on an epic rant about that right now, but I'll right. pocket that one.
But, you know, the thing is, back in that day, you didn't have 400 different celebrities to choose from. You only had a few. So, you know, Muhammad Ali being the biggest thing in the world was really something. And to meet him personally was something as well. And, you know, and just to be an audience of one was even more incredible. So it was a pretty remarkable day. And it's, you know, I'm sad to see that he's gone, although I, you know, I'm somewhat surprised that he made it this long. But, you know, really just a true, genuine individual who wanted to help other people and use that celebrity to get the message of social inequality out.
Well, Rob, on behalf of everyone here at WKAR, we truly appreciate you calling in and sharing that remarkable story. The one, the only, Rob South, formerly of WKAR. Rob, thank you so much.
Thank you, Al. My pleasure. Anytime.
You got it, my man. That was, wow. That was, I got chills listening to that story. That's unbelievable stuff. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will chat with another individual who had a pretty cool relationship with the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. We will invite Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame, also Hall of Fame boxer in his own right. Bob will join us live on the show. You don't want to miss that and so much more. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. We are paying tribute to the greatest of all time, Muhammad Ali. Of course, as many of you know by now, the great Ali passed away on Friday at the age of 74. And right now, via phone, we invite another man who is going to put in perspective the life and legacy of the great one. We invite now Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Sports Hall of Fame and Hall of Fame boxer in his own right, to the show. Bob, welcome. How you doing, my friend?
Well, I'm doing wonderful. Thank you. Great day. And, you know, it's been a sad couple of days, but, you know, the sun came up today, and you're looking outside and you're saying, well, you know what? No matter how bad things get, you know, there's always still beautiful days, and we got to do the best and move on, I guess. But it's a sad thing to have a guy as great as Muhammad Ali not with us any longer, for sure.
It certainly is, and I first want to start this thing pretty simple, Bob. How did you get the news about his death, and what was your reaction?
Well, I had heard that he had been taken into the hospital for some respiratory problems. Routinely, he's going to be there, probably be out by the end of the day. But I kind of got an eerie feeling that, you know, that this was a little bit different. And then I stayed up late into Friday, thinking maybe something would be on. I finally went to bed about 2 a.m., and then I got a call at 6:30 in the morning from a friend of mine in Washington, D.C., that said that he had just heard that Muhammad had passed on. But that's how I first heard about it. And, it's like, Muhammad's like this Monday. You know, Monday's here. I mean, things are functioning normally, Then tomorrow's Tuesday, Monday's gone away for a while, but it comes back, Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I viewed Muhammad, I mean, my association with Muhammad would be on and off, I mean, I would be visiting him with him, I'd talk to him, and then time would go on, and then we'd hook up again, and you always kind of figured, he was always going to be there. Well, he's not there anymore, and I'm not sure if I've really wrapped myself around the fact that he's actually gone. And I think that when you have great people like that that serve the purpose in the world that he has, that's how people feel about those types of things, How can he be gone? I mean, he's so much a part of the world and so much a part of our life that it's not possible, but it is possible. He's gone.
Yeah, I think many of us can echo that, Bob, that we are still a bit numb and trying to put in perspective the fact that he is no longer with us. And, it's so cool, though, looking at your Facebook page, Bob, because you've shared a few photos over the weekend of when it comes to your relationship with Muhammad Ali, of you and Ali in different avenues. And I got to ask, how did it come about? What was the first time you met Muhammad Ali? What was that like?
First of all, the first time I met Muhammad Ali was in 1972. He was speaking in exile at the Michigan State University Auditorium. And I went down after the speech and I introduced myself. And I used a mutual friend's name to kind of get my foot in his door, so to speak. And when I mentioned the name, his eyes lit up. Oh, William Beeler. Yes, I know William. He works out at our gym and he's a good friend of mine. And so that's how I first got my foot in the door. And then from that point on, I made him an occasional letter, always got responses. And then when he was any place near that I could get to see him, I would go there. And then out of that just developed an even stronger relationship. He then recognized me. I mean, I would show up. He may not have remembered my name, but he certainly recognized my face. And then it just matured from there. The relationship just got stronger from there. And the next thing you know, I was going down to his house. I was visiting with him. I had him up here to a couple of Michigan State basketball games. And it just, for as many people as Muhammad Ali knew in this world, I felt like I knew him as well as I could, given the fact that he was such a worldwide person.
Certainly. And, I got to ask, Bob, what was striking about Muhammad in person, whether it be his personality or his physical stature, just something jarring about him that you won't just get from seeing him on your television or in a magazine or via the internet?
Well, it's like you've heard before, Alan, it's no big secret. When he walked into a room, he took center stage. He was center stage. Here's a guy that was walking down one of the very busiest streets in New York, and traffic stopped. Boom. They had this tremendous traffic congestion because somebody spotted Muhammad Ali and wanted to get out of his car and go shake his hand. Then another guy, and pretty soon, nobody can go anywhere because Muhammad Ali's presence is on the block.
Right,
hey, before I forget, though, I know you're a caller that you had before. Now, my recollection of the whole thing is that Muhammad bought the place in Berrien Springs back when he was training for the fight with Ernie Terrell because he wanted to be fairly close to Chicago.
Okay,
And so that's how that thing happened. And it's also my recollection from what I've heard is that that property belonged to, I believe, that property originally belonged to Al Capone's daughter. Now, I don't know if it was still part of that family when Ali bought it, but he did tell me on a number of occasions that out of all the places he's ever lived, that was his most favorite. He really loved being there. He still owns the property, and I suppose they've been trying to sell it for a while, but the asking price is pretty stiff, so who knows whether they're going to get it or not.
Certainly. Wow, I'm definitely have to follow up on that. Okay. Again, folks, if you're just now joining us here on WKAR's Current Sports, we are chatting with the chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame and Hall of Fame boxer, Bob Every. Now, Bob, I saw, as you mentioned, the picture on your Facebook page of yourself, Muhammad Ali, Mateen Cleaves, David Thomas, when Muhammad, of course, met with Izzo squad during that 2000 championship year where they went all the way. And, you know, I got to ask you, when you look at, you know, your relationship with Ali, again, you are a boxer yourself. What type of impact did Ali have on you as a fighter?
Well, I mean, I was attracted to him right away. I mean, he was not always endured by the American public because of his braggadocious and all this other stuff. But I mean, man, I love the guy from the get-go. And I will say to anybody that will listen to me, you know, I've always believed in him and I was always loyal to him. I mean, he was my guy. So I guess I liked the way he kind of monopolized everybody's attention when he was in public. And he said things, and it's like President Bush said on the TV the other night in a clip that I saw. You know, he said he was going to do something, and he did it. And if you can do it, it's not bragging, you know. And Ali was just such a special person. And really in the earlier years, he was disliked, number one, because people didn't understand his association with beliefs of why he didn't want to go in the military and represent this country in Vietnam and this kind of stuff. Well, I think every human being has to do what they have to do, and I certainly would never hold anything like that against him or anybody else for that matter. I mean, if your personal belief, if your religious belief is, you know, I can't do that, then who am I? Who am I as one mangy little individual in this whole world to add an opinion to something that I have no business adding an opinion to? So, I mean, I got by that fairly fast, you know, and I liked him because he was a great fighter and I liked boxing, you know. I mean, he was my hero because he was the best boxer in the land and I was the boxer.
Certainly. All right, Bob, before we get you out of here, we only have about a minute left for you. I just got to ask you, will we ever see another athlete like him?
Oh, I don't believe so. I mean, I think you'll see unique athletes. I mean, you've seen your Pelés and you've seen your Babe Ruth and you've seen your Jackie Robinsons and your Joe Louis's and those guys, but it's going to be a rare breed of cat that comes along again to monopolize the world stage, not only in athletics but in its entirety, the way Muhammad Ali did. When he fought, the world actually stood still. That was the biggest event going on in the world at the time, that particular day. You know, certainly the Ali listen thing bears that out. But, you know, he's just a great individual. He'll be sorely missed. I'll miss him every day, but I'll never forget him. And I've got many photographs and great memories to keep me going until it's time for me to cash out.
And I tell you what, I look forward to seeing those on your Facebook page. Bob Every, chairman of the Greater Lansing Area Sports Hall of Fame and Hall of Fame boxer. Bob, thank you so much for your time this afternoon.
Thanks, Al. I'll talk to you soon, buddy.
You got it, my man. All right, less than 5 minutes left. We're going to go to a quick call. Ray, we're giving you 1 minute to share a memory or a thought on the passing of Muhammad Ali. We've got Ray from Indiana on line one. Ray, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fantastic.
Sad day, Muhammad Ali dying. You know, I was against him with his big mouth when he started boxing, and I was for the Vietnam War, and thank God he was right and I was wrong. And I can see as a black man, why should they all go over there and fight when people were racially discriminating against them left and right? And I thank God that he stood up for that, but I pray to God more that he knew Jesus before he died for our sins.
Ray, thank you so much for your thoughts. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, and live in studio, I had to invite him on Current Sports to tell this story because Scott and myself, we were on Current State this morning with host Mark Bayshore and just sharing our thoughts on Muhammad Ali. And we had to get Scott in the studio because Scott Pohl of WKAR's Current State, he got a chance to meet the great one as well in person. And Scott Pohl, thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Scott.
Sure. I think you've heard better stories than mine, although mine's mine. So
right,
I love
yours
it.
Is yours. Right. I mean, it's not every day you get to meet someone who's met Muhammad Ali.
And it was a chance encounter, which is part of why I love the story. I was sitting in O'Hare Airport with my wife in 1998. Sherry was pregnant with our daughter, Morgan. And at the time, pregnant women, when they see a baby, they go, oh, a baby, you know. Right. And so I was reading something and Sherry says, Scott, and I just figured she'd seen another baby, so I didn't immediately react. This couple walked past us and up to the counter, and she leaned into me and she said, "I think that's Muhammad Ali." And I looked at them both for a moment, and I noticed the man's hand shaking, and I said, "Gee, I think you're right." So I approached the woman, made sure that I was right, that it was indeed Muhammad Ali, and asked if she thought it would be okay to speak with him, and she said, "Of course." So once he finished his business at the counter, he took a seat, and I'm here to tell you, everyone in that terminal got in a line and approached him. He signed every autograph. He posed for every picture. He clowned around with children. The entire University of Illinois gymnastics team happened to be in the terminal, and they ran to get there to pose for a group photo with the champ. Mm-hmm. And my very brief moment with him, I got to look him in the eye and call him champ and tell him I had just seen the documentary When We Were Kings, the
right.
film that was made about the fight in Africa with George Foreman. What a thrill. And I handed our camera to somebody to take a picture of Sherry and me with the champ. And whoever took the picture did a terrible job. It's horribly blurry. I didn't even print the photo. So if you ask me if there's no photo, it didn't happen. You have to take my word for it that it happened because I no longer have this terrible photo.
Well, I wish we had like iPhones back then.
That's right.
Boom.
That's
that would have been really easy.
That's
just
right.
keep taking a bunch
That's
of them and one of them's going to fall. Right. Scott, thank you so much
sure
for that
thing.
Story. That is very cool stuff. All right. Well, we have less than 2 minutes left, and I want to invite Isaac Constance to the show, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports. Isaac, you haven't gotten the chance to weigh in about, you know, the life and legacy of Ali, so I'm going to give you that forum right now, my man.
I appreciate it. I've been waiting to. I love Muhammad Ali. I think the conscientious objector status, that just did so much for society as a whole, and Ali really popularized that issue. But I can't speak half as eloquently about Muhammad Ali as the greatest Muhammad Ali can. So I'd like to play this.
What would you like people to think about you when you've gone?
I'd like for them to say he took a few cups of love. He took one tablespoon of patience, one teaspoon of generosity, one pint of kindness. He took one quart of laughter, one pinch of concern, and then he mixed willingness with happiness. He added lots of faith, and he stirred it up well. Then he spread it over a span of a lifetime, and he served it to each and every deserving person he met. Muhammad Ali, thank you very much.
And you meet so many athletes nowadays who are averse to the media attention and the popularization of their sport and themselves, and Muhammad Ali seemed to embrace it and embrace being a role model for everybody. I thank him for that. I thank him for fighting in New Orleans, my hometown. I love Muhammad Ali. Rest in peace. There is no question. You are the greatest.
Fitting way to end today's show. Thanks so much to Scott Pohl, Bob Every, Ali Easley, Rob South, my man Ray from Indiana, and of course our engineer, Isaac Constance. We'll be back at it same time, same place tomorrow. Thank you for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports with me, Al Martin, right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.